I'm ready good. To go, next speaker.
Okay, hello everyone. Does that work? Yeah.
As long as the legs aren't defined, it doesn't amplify.
Okay, right, okay, so I have to speak out. okay, so I'm really happy to be here. It's my first time at FOSDEM, so I'm a little bit nervous. It's going to be fine. I'm going to talk to you about open layers, which has been mentioned about in a few talks. That's great. So, a little bit of introduction about myself. My name is Olivia. I work at a company called Camp2Camp. A few words about Camp2Camp. So, it's a service company, does geospatial as well as other stuff. It's for infrastructure and hosting. It's based in Switzerland, France, and Germany, and we're about 200 people. It's a great company that does a lot of open source, and you know, they allow me to be here, so it's great. And I have been working on the open layers project for a few years now. I contributed to some stuff. I touched a bit of everything, but mostly the WebGL renderer stuff, which we're going to talk about later. And you can reach me out on GitHub, Blue Sky, and it's my email address. So, right, just a quick question first. Who here has used open layers before? Okay, that's quite a lot. Great. Okay, great. I'm really happy that the others will be able to discover it. So, OpenLayers, it's a JavaScript library for doing interactive maps on the web. There's other open source libraries around. The main open source libraries are Leaflet, MapLibre, and OpenLayers. But OpenLayers has been around for a long time. The first version was out in 2006, actually, I checked. It was rewritten from scratch in 2013, and it's constantly evolving and improving, and I think that's really important. The code base is very healthy, it's kept up to date. It's very well tested also, which is important. You can use it by doing npm install OL, so it's an npm package. I'll come back to that a bit later. Quick screenshot of the GitHub repository. So the website, the code source is hosted on GitHub, openlayers/openlayers. And you can see here, so it's been around for a while, so we have a lot of stars, a bit of a vanity metric, a lot of commits. The license is BSD2 clause. We have almost 90 open pull requests, so this number is increasing. The last time I did a talk it was half of that, so the community is active, but there's more, I guess there's a growing interest in it, so it's good, but it's also hard to catch up. So OpenLayers has the reputation to be a quite big library. Probably people have called it bloated at times. The important thing to understand is that in OpenLayers, every feature is split into separate modules. So, you know, there's just one package, which is a NPM package, which is OL. But if you only import the features that you need, it won't have too much of a burden on your code. That's really important. I mean, there should be tree shaking happening. So if you don't use all of it, it can actually be quite light. And the reason for this is that, contrary to Leaflet, for example, OpenLayers does not expect you to rely too much on a plugin ecosystem. There are extensions and plugins out there, and some of them are really good, but the library is thought to have all the main features inside and maintained in the core code at the same level of quality. Let's look at some stuff that we can do with the library. I want to cover a few topics. I won't have too much time to dive too deep, so I'll just cover a few stuff, and then you can look for yourself afterwards. Vector data, that works. So you can see here, this is an example, it's basic vector layer example. This is a big GeoJSON data set of the world. And I can pan around, zoom in, zoom out, works great. This example actually used the WebGL renderer. The way we define styles in OpenLayers, so I want to talk a bit about this. If you used OpenLayers maybe a few years ago, you might have used like the mainstream styling API, which where you instantiate style objects, and it's very verbose, it's quite complicated. Also, it relies a lot on style functions. We introduced a couple of years ago, I think, the concept of expression-based styling. So instead of defining these complex styling objects and functions that are evaluated all the time, you can just give it a set of rules, of styling rules. And I hope this is readable, maybe not that much, but so each rule has a filter and style properties. So the filter lets you select which objects will be affected by that rule, and then the style properties will be for these objects. This is very important move, and we really recommend people to use that. And a very important part of this is that filters and style properties can be, so here it's just a color, but you can also have expressions, so expressions for filters and for style properties. And this way, you don't have to rely on style functions anymore. You can define the style using these expressions. It's a very powerful system. It's not very easy to use at first. We actually got most of the inspiration from the MapLibre style specification, which also used these kind of expressions. If you use this kind of styling, you will be able to have better performance. For instance, if you want to use WebGL rendering, you have to use these. You cannot use style functions. This is another example of vector data using WebGL, and you can see here we apply a filter that's actually that changes along a line according to values along a line. So we can, you know, change the filter dynamically and then have the lines render differently. We also have colors changing along the line. I think it's a very interesting example of what we can do with these style expressions, which we couldn't do before. Vector data, you can also render it using clusters. It's pretty standard. You have also a heat map. And then let's move on to tile data. So OpenAIOS loves tile data. Obviously, it's very efficient for rendering. It comes in many different types and shapes. The most simple tile data is just image tiles. So you can see here you have map tiles coming from IGN in France. So OpenAIOS will just load the tiles at the correct zoom level and stitch them together, and that's all working well. Here you have an example that shows vector ties. So same principle. Here the vector ties, instead of being images, are, you know, bunches of geometries in them. And they're not styled. So you can see kind of what's looking, how it looks inside a vector tile. But most of the time you would want to style them, obviously. OpenAIOS has a lot of logic for loading ties, you know, the right ties at the right time. And you can see here there's an animation, and I'm animating the view from Berlin to Brussels. And while the view is animating, you know, the ties that are shown change along the way, and OpenAIOS try to find the best tie for the best zoom level so that the map stays crisp and readable. There's a tile queue system. You can change the size of the tile cage. This is all very elaborate. Tile data is distributed across tile grids, and I just want to mention this because oftentimes we see tiles on a web Mercator tile grid, right? The world is a square and we split it by two and two and two. But a tile grid can be anything. It can be in different projections, it can be just over a certain area, and OpenAIOS has no assumption over the tile grid that you use. OpenAIOS also will handle devices with higher pixel density. So typically mobile devices can have like 2, 3, 4 and more DPIs. And then the library will try and load the right ties, you know, use the higher quality ties if available and these kind of things. Again, so that it stays very crisp on your screen. Vector ties also have decluttering applied to them. So typically if you have vector ties with the labels, you might not want to show all the labels at the same time because that would be unreadable. So decluttering happens. And this is also a very elaborate system where you can change a lot of things. Raster data. So raster data typically comes from satellite imagery, also like drone or other kind of photography. And what you can do in OpenAIOS is you can actually render, you can give the library raw raster data and render it in different ways. Here we use a GeoTIFF file, and then we compute on the fly the NDVI, so the normalized difference vegetation index. And to do that, we use again an expression. So here you can see we're creating a tile layer, which is for image tiles. And this tile, instead of being for vector data, it's just has a color property. And here we give it an expression. And this expression computes NDVI, NDWI, and assigns it to the different channels. This is all done on the client, right? This is done on the fly. And that means that you can just decide, you know, give the raw data to OpenAI and decide how to render it. For example, here, this data comes from Sentinel-2. Here we're just assigning, you know, the visible color bands to the color channels, right? So red bands goes to red, etc. But we can also switch the styling and have the red channel be the infrared band and the other channels be something else. And then, you know, you can, again, on the fly, you can just change the way the data is showing on the map. OpenLayers has support for many different kinds of projections. This is also very important in the library. When you create a map, by default, it's going to be Web Mercator. It's like a sensible default. But you can give it really anything that's supported by Proj4. And here, for example, this is a map of the world using Mollweide projection. You can have many other kind of projections. You can have polar projections and these kind of things. And this is very important also, I want to emphasize, in OpenLayers, you have the concept of the view projection, right? You decide how your map will be rendered with which projection, but you also have the projection of your data. So if your data comes from a different projection, OpenLayers will most likely be able to convert it on the fly. If it's vector data, it will transform the vector coordinates. And if it's raster data, it will also be able to distort the images so that it matches the projection. Right, another addition that was done pretty recently that's really cool, it's a flow layer. So it's a WebGL rendered layer. You can give it a grid of values, typically coming from a weather data. And then the layer will interpolate between those values and then make a field out of it and then simulate particles going over it. This is pretty common visualizations, but no, it's built in the library. You can have many different formats in OpenLayers. Just a quick list. I'm just going to not spend too much time on this. Many different sources. OpenLayers now support OGC API standards, so map and vector ties, classic OGC protocols, WMS, etc. Sentinel Hub also is a source now. PM ties. You can use Google Maps if you have a key. Stadium Maps. Cloud Optimized GeoTIFF is also a data source. The way it works is when you create a layer, you have to assign it a source, right? You have different kind of layers, different kind of source, and you kind of make that work together. Map can have different controls and interactions. Again, you know, I'm not going to spend too much time on this. Classic to draw interaction, select, modify. You can rotate the view, full screen, scale bar. They have a graticule and these kind of things. This is an example of a draw interaction that uses tracing, which I think it's really nice. So you see here, you're going to draw a shape, and I think that would be cool, InteliDraw. and then you will have this kind of snapping where it will follow a shape, and that's really useful if you have complex shapes. This is also something that the draw interaction can do for you. OpenLayers has first-class mobile support. So I talked about pixel density, but also like when you create a map by default, it will work on mobile, so you can interact with your fingers. You can zoom in, zoom out. You can rotate the map and these kind of things. It's really like first-class support. How to use the library? So this is what it looks like to create a map. It's just a pretty simple example, and actually most of the time it will be much more complex than that. Just, you know, the general concept, you have a map which contains layers. Layers have sources, and then a map has a view. The view lets you, you know, center on objects. The view have very useful functions. If you want to center on an object, if you want to animate the view, compute an extent, and these kind of things. And then you set up controls and interactions. The NPM package called OL, we've seen that before, It comes with type definitions. So OpenAIOS is written in JavaScript, but it has JS doc annotations. So it's a type library, and you get TypeScript support. If you use npm install OL, you get the latest stable version. You can use OL at dev if you want to have the latest version on main. That can be really useful if the features have not been released yet. The main version is usually very stable. There might be a few bugs that haven't been fixed yet or breaking changes, but most of the time you're good to go. There's a very extensive example list on the website, so openaios.org, EN latest examples. I usually suggest people to start with this. It's a very, there's like 258 examples. There's an example for almost every feature. And if you're not sure if the library can do something or what it looks like when it runs, then just take a look at the example and you should have your answers. There's an API doc as well. Recently, we came up with something interesting. We created a website for doing benchmarks. And that's because in the past year and a half, sort of, we tried improving the performance of vector data rendering as much as possible. We invested a lot of time and energy in this. And to get an idea of how good the library was getting, we came up with these benchmarks. So these benchmarks, you have different cases, right? Rendering polygons, rendering lines, etc., rendering vector ties. And for each case, you have like this these shapes showing up, and you can change all the parameters and increase the number of shapes and see how far you can push the library. And basically, by doing this, we try and find the soft limit on the library, and that's a very good indication of should we improve this part of the rendering further or not. You can switch from WebGL, you can switch on or off WebGL rendering. And you can also, there's a performance tracker which gives you an idea of what's going on at each frame. And this is very interesting for us when you try to improve the performance. But I think it's also interesting, you can take a look at it if you want to have an idea of how the library runs and what performance you can expect from it. So the website is openaios.org/bench. And you can also change, go to different past versions and see how it behaves. That's pretty cool. So we worked a lot on the performance for vector data. And that's mostly done through WebGL rendering, which I talked a little bit. Just a few words to say why I think this project is important and why I care about it very much. So I mentioned the other open source libraries, MapLibre and Leaflet. I think each library has their strong points and weaknesses. The thing is, OpenAIOS is really, it's not easy to use. I mean, it has a bit of a complexity, but it can do, really pretty much anything. You can throw pretty much anything at it and it will render it. It's completely agnostic to the source providers, data providers, the kind of data, can be tiled data or not, many different formats and projections. The project is not owned by a company. It's a true community project. And I have to say, it's a very neutral project because there's no assumption about anything. There's no, Western assumptions because you can use it in different projections, different parts of the world. We have regularly Chinese users, I think, showing up on the GitHub, which makes communication a bit hard, but I think that's a very interesting thing. Also, a good example is text rendering on a map, because we rely on the text rendering of the browser. It means that text can be anything. It doesn't have to be our alphabet. It can be right to left. It can be different characters. And this all works really well. So just a quick word to say that if you want to help, you're welcome. Go to GitHub. You can try it out. If you find a bug, please report it. And if you want to try your hand at it, please try and open a pull request and people will help you out. No worries. That's it. Time for questions.
I have an open pull request. I would like landed.
Okay. Okay, so your pull request, when was it opened? Before what?
A month ago.
Okay. Right, so also keep in mind that people sometimes use their own time to work on this. So, you know, basically what we try and do is say, yeah, okay, I'll have to look at it. I can say, yeah. It's probably great, so. Right.
How do you, the maintainers decide, what should be included in the core library and what to, potentially offload to, a plugin or just some external code? How does that discussion happen?
So the question is, how do maintainers decide what gets put inside the library or what maybe is left for other plugins to do? I think the library tries to have as many to handle as many providers and formats as possible. So, you know, if there's something coming up, and for example, the OGC API standards, then, you know, they became more stable and then they were supported in the library. When it comes to functionalities, more like high level stuff, like interactions or complex drawing things, for example, then usually we'll be like, maybe, you know, people can do that in other extensions or in their application code. The interaction stuff stays quite low level, I would say. Yes?
So how is the interaction done? Is it only like drawing with a mouse and click, or can you feed the coordinates to and draw by?
Okay, the question is about drawing, right? The drawing interaction, how can you? So the default drawing interaction, you can click, set a vertex at every click. You also have a freehand mode. But you can also programmatically push coordinates. And that's what we do in the tracing stuff, right? When you snap to a polygon, then we push coordinates without clicking.
Yeah, but if I have a map that I just want to feed it with, if I want to track objects on a map,
right?
Is this a tool to use or not?
Oh, no, probably not. Okay, so if you want to fill your map with data, you don't need to do interaction is really when it comes to the user doing something. But if you programmatically want to push objects in your map, then you don't need interactions. You basically push data on your source, at the source level, and then it shows up on the map. Yeah.
Can you share about how you do performance testing on mobile devices when they're constrained in CPU or RAM, or in cases of bad networks, people are far away, how do you do that?
Okay, so about performance on mobile. So network, you can do offline stuff with OpenIRs, but it's not really handled by the library. If you push the data into a source, if you're offline or online, actually the library doesn't really care. The library tries to be as light as possible on battery. This benchmark website can also be used to test stuff on mobile. But I mean, for a long time we didn't have any proper metrics for it. We were just trying stuff, try the examples on your mobile or use an emulator or something. But now we try to have better metrics. Okay.